Extra time.
Hello, welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and joining me today is Chris Hamill. Hello, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm okay, thank you, buddy. Pleasure to be on the podcast. How are you? How's the daughter? How's life in general? We've not had a catch-up in a week or so. I've been away, of course, over the weekend.
Well, oh, yeah, you were off in Hamburg, right?
Yeah, it was a great little trip. Needed a little pick-me-up. Obviously, come back, the news is entirely depressing. Mm-hmm, and quite hard to get motivated to talk about football, I guess, when the people of Ukraine are suffering to that extent. But I've rationalised that we're here to entertain and we're here to take people's minds off things which are pretty incomprehensible, I guess.
Mm, yeah, I'm not sure how to follow that up, so I guess we should just go straight into the show for today.
Onto relegation, yes.
Yeah, onto the relegation battle, which I think is probably the most interesting story in the Premier League right now, because over a third of the division at the moment is embroiled in it. Now, today we figure we'll talk about who could take that 18th place, because frankly, I'm assuming that Norwich and Watford are gone. Now, they're not entirely out of touch. Obviously, Norwich on 17 points, Watford on 19, Burnley on 21, and then Everton in 17th on 22. So within 10 points here, we've got eight teams. So it is crazy. Basically possible for any of these sides to get relegated at this point. But Norwich have a minus 40 goal difference. Watford, minus 22. This is not good stuff. And they've played more games than a bunch of the teams above them. So frankly, I'm saying, unless you've got a strong case otherwise, Chris, I'm saying that these teams are basically gone. Now, obviously, a hot streak is possible. More for Watford than for Norwich, I'd say. But frankly, I think they're gone. But it's incredibly tight this season. I was looking at 538's prediction model, and they currently have seven Premier League sides projected to finish under 40 points. If that happens, that must surely be unprecedented.
You know, if it stayed as is, that'd be quite satisfying for me, because on our preseason predictions on Sunday Vibes, I did predict Watford, Norwich and Burnley all to go down. And I'm not going to give myself too much credit for that, because obviously Norwich, perennial yo-yo club, although they have armed themselves with a very good manager to bounce back up once more in the upcoming seasons, haven't they? And they did have a big squad turnover when they first came to this division. So I think they're probably planned for life in the Championship more so than a Burnley or a Watford. I feel like I'm fair in saying that. But no, I am with you. I think these two sides are going down. Roy Hodgson has brought a little bit of defensive stability to Watford, but they should have conceded about four against Manchester United. So I think that might be just the numbers, the top line numbers, rather than the reality. As for Burnley, I get why people like them in the Premier League, because they're a very distinct flavour, aren't they? Or a different flavour from a lot of other teams. They do provide a bit of welcome respite from the 70% possession that, you know, top teams at the top of the table have, and or the counter-attacking football of Leeds or Southampton. You know, it's nice to have a house club in the league, but I think they deserve to go down as well, man. So I'd be happy if they stayed as is. Yeah, I'm a little bit bored of them now. A little bit like John McGinn. I'm bored of seeing Sean Dyche in that same black jacket prowl up and down the touchline like a miserable old man.
Yeah, I've got to say, I wouldn't be terribly sad if Burnley got relegated, but we might as well start with them. We're going to go through all these teams here, though I think we may only just touch on Leicester, because they are technically in this battle, but I don't know. It seems silly to say anybody's too good to get relegated, but surely of these sides, Leicester should be. But let's talk about Burnley since you brought them up. I kind of think Burnley are going to pull themselves out of this, you know? Like, they've got a couple of games in hand on Leeds. They've got three games in hand on Brentford. They've got a better goal difference than all of the sides we're going to talk about today, except for Leicester. Their main issue has been just turning draws into wins, and that's because, well, I suppose their main issue. That is an issue because they cannot score goals. They've got 12 draws, which I think is only exceeded by one side across Europe, which is Genoa. And Genoa are, of course, the only side as well who have fewer wins than their three. So those are issues. But they've always got a degree of defensive solidity. I think Weghorst is not only good, I think he's going to be an upgrade on Chris Wood up front. I think he's got, currently he's got the same shot numbers as Wood. He's putting up slightly better creative numbers and he's going to press a lot more. And I think that overall that adds up to a vastly superior package. And that's a guy, you know, who's had a handful of games in the league. I think he's on 5 or 6 games in the league. I don't know, like they just... Again, like you, I understand why people don't really want to see them in the league. They feel like something from the past, but actually they defend in a much more sophisticated way than a side like this would have done 15 years ago, right? They're not just kind of park everybody in the back line and deal with it. They play like a really interesting mix of like man marking and zonal. They do have a surprising little pockets of quality. I mean, Goodmanson obviously has been out long term, but people really like McNeil. Weghorst is obviously a guy that we enjoy. It just feels like...
I heard you say people really like McNeil there. Is that you saying you don't quite like McNeil as much as people like McNeil? Or...
Well, I think that he's a guy who's fashionable to like. I think that basically when you talk to people about football, generally speaking, people don't really give their honest opinions so much as they give opinions that they think will not get them mocked by people on Twitter or whatever. And I think it's generally considered that McNeil was like a really, really good player. And therefore, generally speaking, people say he is a really, really good player. Whereas actually, his numbers are the numbers of a pretty mediocre player at best. Now, obviously, I'd expect those would get better in a better side. Mm. But there's no guarantee that would happen. It doesn't happen for lots of players. So with McNeil, essentially, my opinion is just jury's out. And I look forward to him going to a proper Premier League side. And we'll see what actually happens to him. Because I will say that I feel sorry for him to be stuck at this particular team. When if he were at a Palace or an Everton, he would probably just have a much more fun time of it. As it is, he's just defending all the time, trying to produce something out of nothing and then just whipping balls into the box. And I doubt that is particularly good for his development, basically.
I think the last time I checked out his numbers, I can recall his dribbles being around 2.5 and that being the only really impressive thing about his game. Uh-huh. Although he was like one of two players at Burnley to put up over a key pass per game as well. And I think that is where they might fall short. It's just a distinct lack of even like solid creativity. So if Weghorst doesn't keep making good on things that come his way, whether that be, you know, through goals or assists, I could just see them maintaining this run of draws. There's just not even a good like progressive passer or dribbler in that side. They've got plenty of industry, like you said, which you'd expect from a Sean Dyche side. Brownhill, I think, has adjusted to life at Premier League football pretty well over the last couple seasons. Goodmanson, who I've liked historically, has been bang average on that right wing. Maxwell Cornet, I guess, had a hot streak when he first came, mm-hmm, didn't he? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're right in there. But I mean, here's the thing. Like, when you're... I don't know, man. Like, I just think that, like, Brentford have played more games and haven't got points. You know, Burnley are 3 points behind Brentford with 3 games in hand. Now, obviously, when you're a relegation threat inside, games in hand are no guarantee of points. But you just look at them and you think they'll grind out some matches. They'll get an odd result here and there. There might just be enough here. Whereas I think there are more troubling signs for other people. But we'll come back to it at the end and maybe make our predictions on who we think is going to take this 18th place.
Yeah. And I think they've already played Arsenal, Man United and Liverpool twice, haven't they? So maybe less trepidation going into the running than certain sides on this list.
Yeah, and only 5 sides have allowed fewer goals. Now, partially that's a function of them having played fewer games. But it's also just that they are difficult to break down. They're annoying to play. So I don't know. I'm relatively positive about Burnley, given where they are. Should we deal with Leicester? Should we deal with Leicester?
Yeah, why not? I can actually talk about Leicester.
I don't think Leicester are going down. However, I think they're rubbish. They're 6 points clear of the relegation zone, but they do have more games to play than everybody else here. They've got the best goal difference of all these sides. They've had a bunch of injuries this season. Now people are getting back to full fitness. It just feels like they'll basically be fine. All they need is like a good run in from 2 or 3 of the 7 or 8 very talented players they have. You know, like if Ricardo Pereira gets back into form and Ndidi is back in midfield and great, they'll be fine. If Dakar and Vardy are great in attack, they'll be fine. Like they've got so many paths to safety.
But yeah, it feels like the dark days of Puel, the end of Puel's tenure again at the moment, still without a Premier League win in 2022. Although I will say performances have picked up. I think they were distinctly better against Wolverhampton, unlucky against West Ham not to get the result. I think they got better, a better XG than both of those oppositions in those respective ties. But it was really against Wolves that I thought they looked reminiscent of last season's Leicester, like very convincing in possession, had 65% of the ball. They were much crisper with their passing. I think around a 90% pass accuracy in that game. Like, being lax on the ball is something we've seen creep into Leicester's game this season, when really people like Tielemans, people like Ndidi have historically had 85 to 90% pass accuracy. Like, we've just seen them give away like possession at stupid junctures, haven't we? They had 17 shots against Wolves, and that's not the side who concede an awful lot of shots or concede an awful lot of goals. So I think that was a bit of a pick-me-up performance for Leicester fans, and it's kind of emboldened them going into the final third of the last season. They have got a couple of competitions to contend with, haven't they? I think the Europa Conference is probably of more importance than Brendan Rodgers would have liked at this point. It could barely conceal his disdain for the tournament when they dropped out of the Europa League. But now they have, you know, an okay tie against Rennes, a very winnable tie against Rennes. And if they win the competition, they get automatic promotion, let's say, into the Europa League. So that might be their most viable route back into Europa League football, which is important to them at this point. Very important, especially when you consider that they're, I think they reported a loss of £33 million in their latest earnings. And a lot of that obviously is because of the pandemic. Stadiums have been shut. Matchday revenue is way down. But they can only keep nipping at the heels of Champions League clubs if they keep getting like decent prize money and keep getting decent investment from their owners. And in order to do that, they've got to tick a few boxes still, haven't they? Like you said, I mean, they played Burnley tonight. We're filming this on a Tuesday. It's going to go out Thursday. Jamie Vardy is back. We might be talking about them on Sunday Vibes this week. You know, Jamie Vardy, still their top goal scorer with 9, I believe, in 16 league appearances. If he puts in a commanding performance against Burnley, we'll be like, listen, Jamie Vardy can empower them to mid-table and they can regroup and go again next season. Fofana, back training with the first team. My Christ, do they need him, because Sionko has looked, without Johnny Evans, has looked awful at various points this season. And they're running, you know, the last three games, Everton, Watford, Southampton. Like, even a conservative estimate, looking at those remaining fixtures, I think puts them around like 11th, 12th. So I think they're fine as well. But a lot of Leicester fans have run out of confidence, not run out of confidence, have run out of patience with Rodgers an awful lot quicker than I anticipated, which has been interesting to observe.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably be thinking about a change this summer. I wouldn't necessarily do it, but I'd have a look around at what was on the managerial market. Because one of my issues, if I were Leicester, and obviously you've got to be realistic about your place in the football hierarchy, but one of my issues with Rodgers has been that I think he has always thought of himself as better than pretty much wherever he's been. You know, even when he was at his boyhood club, you know, at Celtic, he clearly wanted to get back to the Premier League. Now he's at a really well-run, you know, exciting, well-supported club with a great squad at Leicester. Still seems to kind of want to move on. Like, he never shuts down. He didn't shut down Arsenal rumours when they came before. He didn't shut down Man United rumours when they came. And I just think that annoys me about him. And I don't think that right now he's good enough to justify it. Like, I think they've got worse every season under him, as I've said.
Well, especially defensively, right?
Yeah. And I mean, and even now, you know, they're not pressing at all. They pressed the least of any side in the league over the last 10 games. Now, that's not necessarily a sign of quality, but it is a move away from the kind of proactive football that really got people on board when Rodgers arrived after what was quite a grindy side under Puel, even though I think they were better under Puel than they got credit for. I don't know. I just think that, like I say, you don't have to move him on, but maybe have a look around. And if an interesting name is available, you think about it, because as far as I'm concerned, the teams in Europe who are, you know, unequivocally more attractive prospects for managers and players than Leicester, it's not a big number. I really don't think it's a big number. You know, it's certainly It's 15 max, I think, and it's probably fewer than that.
Yeah. I doubt they'll do anything with him, given not their not perilous financial situation, but given the losses, I doubt they'll be wanting to pay him a severance anytime soon, given his contract runs until 2025. And I think he is one of the Premier League's best paid managers. So purely from a pragmatic point of view, I don't think the Leicester owners want to get rid of him, particularly with the money they've invested in the infrastructure of the club as well. They'll probably want an element of stability for, you know, footballing operations while Seagrave is complete. I think it's completed now, the new training station, training centre, and it cost an arm and a leg, didn't it? And they want to expand the stadium and whatnot. So I don't think they'll want to juggle multiple things while having a turnover in manager just because they didn't qualify for Europe, let's say. But yeah, I think he's escaped a certain degree of scrutiny, which is where I believe you're going with this.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to act like a big time manager, then you're going to be held to high standards. And I mean, and when you think about where Leicester have been the last couple of seasons, yes, of course, Rodgers gets credit for it. But if you're going to get credit for the good times, you kind of need to get criticism for the bad times. That's how it works. And yes, they've had injuries, but a lot of teams have had injuries. And I don't really think that the way that they've responded to some of those injuries, I think, has been a little bit troubling. I would have expected Rodgers, who is clearly a clever coach, to have been a bit more flexible. And also, I mean, we've talked about this before. One of the things that's really difficult is when a side gets embarrassed, you know? Like, often an embarrassing result is a far bigger problem for a coach than just a loss. Because it feels like more of a thing. And so though they only lost, you know, by a goal when they played Tottenham, that was a really humiliating result. It shouldn't have been, because they were by far the inferior side across the game. But the manner of it at the end was just really frustrating, I think. And so I do kind of understand why Leicester fans are a little bit annoyed. But same as every managerial decision, I think you always just assess if there's anything better and you don't make a change for the sake of it. Especially not in this case, when Rodgers is at worst going to be fine. He's going to keep you in the mid-table. They'll probably finish in the mid-table.
And they're going to... it's like very likely they'll lose one of their better players in Tielemans in the summer, who's still dithering on his contract, isn't he? Wants to play Champions League football, understandably. And there's a bunch of suitors for him, right? So I think he'll be moved on. So they won't want to have to kind of do major surgery on the defence, I imagine.
Yeah.
Lose Tielemans, change manager, build a new stadium all at the same time. So I can see him being there, but maybe he should be a little more... be a little bit more grateful for being there, rather than kind of look like he's trying to use him as a platform every 6 months, or particularly when things are going well. But I think that's just him, isn't it? He thinks he belongs at that the summit of the Premier League, and I have been more understanding of that viewpoint than maybe others. But yeah, let's see if he gets there. Next season's going to be a big season for him.
Yeah, and I mean, look, that's a good situation for them as well. Like, losing Tielemans, that's a perfectly fine player to lose. I don't think that will hurt them as much as losing other players might. I'd kind of be okay with it. And especially given Leicester's history in recruitment, like, I think they can turn that money around and do something interesting. So shall we carry on? Shall we move down? So let's go on to Newcastle next, who are the form team in the lower half. 14 points from the last 18 available. Really good stuff. They haven't even got much change out of Bruno Guimarães yet. I think he's got 26 minutes. He's currently coming on as an injury time replacement for Joe Willock, who suddenly is reborn as well, which is great. So yeah, they seem to be doing well at the moment. I think it looks like they're probably safe here, just because they've got a couple of games in hand on the guys below them. Obviously, again, no certainties. And the Kieran Trippier injury, look, I mean, he got two goals before he got injured, important goals. He got them from, I think, 0.2 XG combined. So I wouldn't have expected that hit rate to continue. But those goals meant a lot. And it felt like it wasn't even so much his output that lifted the side so much as his presence in the squad really did seem to do something for the team.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see what happens now he's gone. But they look like they're in a really healthy situation.
Yeah, he was quickly becoming talismanic for them, wasn't it? And it's interesting to watch. I found myself watching a lot of Newcastle, actually, since the turn of the year. And it was interesting to watch during games. He was always hassling the referee, always organising the back line, like a really high degree of match intelligence. And he no doubt benefited from from being part of Atletico in Madrid's La Liga winning side to that degree, right? Like he's brought some of that savviness, some of that streetwiseness back from Spain, and you can see it sort of filter into the players that are around him for sure. So I definitely agree on that front. Are we, are you ready to give Eddie Howe a little bit more credit for the job he's done, or do you think it's just solid?
I still don't think he's a very good coach. My issue with Eddie Howe is I think he was uniquely bad choice for Newcastle, and I kind of still think that's true. I think this was not a sensible move for them. If they stay up, then great. You know, they've got what they wanted out of it. I think they've got a bit lucky to have done that, and I think it's probably, you could put it down as much to a good signings in January, but I certainly give him credit for the moving Joel Linton back into midfield, which has made them much more dynamic. I mean, the combination of having Joel Linton and Willock in midfield does suddenly make you so much faster from end to end, and they've been pressing way more. Since Christmas, I think their passes per defensive action, which we use as a measure of how much teams are pressing, is really good. I think only City, Liverpool, Brighton and Leeds have a better PPDA since Christmas. Now, I will say it's been a pretty easy run in that time. They've got a positive goal difference since Christmas, a positive XG difference. But of course, you know, really benefited from that early red card in the Brentford game. They also played a really out of sorts Everton. So those games have kind of juiced their XG. Whereas if you look at the other matches, they haven't really produced much of anything, you know, against Villa or whoever it might be. So there are still questions to be answered here, but when you're this low down the table, one or two wins basically does it. And if Kieran Trippier turns, you know, a free kick in a decent position into a goal, do that two or three times and you basically can pull yourself out of the relegation zone. And now it looks like, because they've got so many teams below them, even if things go wrong, a lot of stuff has to go right for the sides below them for them to get dragged back in. So of course they're not safe. They're not safe at all. I think they're on 26 points. They're 5 points above the drop. But certainly they're the only side here who right now are playing like a team that really is going to get out of this situation.
Yeah, they're playing a brave brand of football, I would say. And I mean, sometimes the lines blur between, you know, brave and naive, particularly when it comes to Eddie Howe's sides or just Bournemouth historically. But I am enjoying them being much more aggressive in and out of possession.
Yeah.
Like you've said, they've traditionally been, like when they've played a back five, it's kind of like they've been camped in their own third, waiting for the other sides to come onto them. And as you touched upon with Willock and Joel Linton, they've been really proactive in the midfield. The defence has definitely shortened that gap from defence to midfield. And they're just in teams' faces an awful lot sooner than they have been under Bruce, under Rafa Benitez. And it's meant that the distance to travel towards the opposition's goal has been significantly shortened, hasn't there? And that's where Winston Maximan or even, you know, Fraser, when they pick it up, can cause real damage. So I think that braveness is kind of leaning into some of their strengths as well. Like if we can get the ball to these players really quickly, then so be it. And they've shown they can go another way with it as well. Chris Wood has not been prolific, but my God, has he been a really solid focal point for them. I also want to shout out Fabian Schär's improvement under Eddie Howe as well. In the games I've watched, he's been extremely composed, distributing from the back. And him and Dan Burn look like a really solid little centre-half partnership.
Yeah, I think the personnel improvements like really made the difference here. And I think it's one of those things where in another season, where there were only, say, four or five bad teams in the division, they might be in a lot more trouble. But this season, because there are so many sides that are in horrible form or have had serious injuries, there are more points to be picked up for these teams. And so now you look at, you know, the next few games, or the run-in rather, and you think, okay, well, if we play Leeds, if we play Brentford, if we play Villa, you know, like there are a lot of points on the table here. Whereas in previous seasons, we've said, wow, everybody in the league is pretty solid. Two or three years ago, we were saying that. And then I think that maybe this Newcastle side would find them in more difficulty. But right now, compared to the defences being mounted by some of these sides, Newcastle look like peak Juventus or something. Like, I mean, we should move on to one of those. Let's go on to Brentford, because Brentford...
Oh, woof.
I know. And it's kind of sad to see. Like, I kind of don't quite get it, because I think Brentford are a... They've got lots of talent. I think their manager's a smart guy. I think he's done some really clever stuff during the course of the season. I think they are better than where they are right now, but my God, their slide lately.
Yeah, I think we kind of dismissed them as relegation candidates a long time ago because of the dynamite start they had to the league season, right? They were seventh after seven games, and now they've lost seven times in the last eight games, just sucked them right back into it. And it is their attack that is really faltering, isn't it? Only created over one XG three times in the last 11 games. And then when you pair that up with an increasingly porous defence, it's looking really, really poor. I don't think Ivan Toney's having the season we anticipated or hoped. And Bermo's been, he's been decent. Am I right in saying that he's probably been their best attacker?
Yeah, he had decent XG numbers, but like Toney, including penalties, I think Toney's got like 10 expected goals and assists, but only like 8 actual goals and assists. And Bermo has like 9 expected goals and assists and has 6 actual goals and assists. So like, you can't afford that when your defense is shipped 2 goals a game over their last 11 and 1.5 XG a game. Now, obviously that means that there's, you know, some improvement to be gained there just by reverting to the mean. But it's, I don't know, you can't get unlucky at both ends and stay in the division. It cannot happen.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the introduction of Christian Eriksen, who obviously featured in their last game, might help in this regard, a little bit more poise in the final third. And when it comes to like chance creation, they have struggled as well. We spoke about Burnley as only having sort of a couple of players who are putting up every key pass per game, but that is also the kegs at Brentford. I think Matthijs Jensen in midfield is doing an okay job of it. Ivan Toney has been an okay creator when called upon, just because he's a, you know, good physical presence. But Christian Eriksen, if he can start finding Mbeumo, if he can start finding Toney, if Toney can be a little bit further up the pitch and not be trying to stitch together midfield and attack, they might get some joy out of it. But yeah, they haven't been a great watch recently, which is definitely the case in the first half of the season. And when you're that porous at the back and you're playing a back five, it is worrying, because you're not squeezing the talent out of your disposal.
Yeah, but I do think Frank is probably one of the superior coaches in the division. Like, I mean, like early in the season. Okay, so something we often talk about, right, besides coming up from the Championship, and you can see it with Brentford, they come up with huge possession numbers. You see this with Norwich every time. They come up with like 60% possession, and they just cannot do it in the Prem. And Brentford came up with 54% possession, and it's gone down to 44% this season. So that's obviously a big difference. But early days, you know, the first 7 games when they were up to 7th, they were playing counter-attacking football, and they were doing it pretty well. They played really well. They played okay against Arsenal at home. They played really well against Liverpool and Chelsea at home, and were unlucky to only get a point out of those games. And it just seemed like something they'd be able to do is, like you say, using Toney as a pivot, creating big chances for Mbeumo on the break. And I guess teams have just adjusted and those have dried up. I mean,
Do you know what was quite alarming? They changed it up to a 4-3-3, didn't they, against Newcastle. And when you start to see teams experiment in the dying embers of the season and results aren't going their way, you kind of think, oh dear. I think Christopher Ayer was playing right back, if I remember correctly, but it did not go well.
But I mean, at the same time, it's a very early red card, and who knows?
Oh, of course, yeah.
So it's possible that things get better. They don't have really significant injuries going down the stretch, which is not true of some of these other sides. But they played more games than everybody here. And that's a worry. And I mean, if no attacker has more than 0.4 XG, which is the same position as Burnley are in, but you do not have Burnley's defence, I really don't know what your hope is to keep you in the division, unless Toney suddenly, you know, 3/4 of the way through the season catches fire. So it just feels like, I mean, I think Brentford were always prepared for this, to be fair to them. I think they always thought, right, they added on Yeka this summer, right? They added Wissa, they added Aya. but they kind of knew that they were going to have to just hope they could stay up and then try and build more of a Premier League side. But as it is, they worry me right now.
And I really hope that De Silva looked like a Premier League player when he came into the side. It was him that got sent off against Newcastle, right? That's scuppered what could have been a very important game for them. I totally forgot about the red card. Was it also Vissa that was just catching fire at the start of the season as well and just scoring every time he came on? And I think goals have dried up for him as well, right? So they've kind of lost that impact from the bench. But yeah, I'm not a massive authority on Brentford, but maybe it is time to start paying attention to them with regards to going down, yeah.
The only player who I've really, truly been unequivocally impressed with is Norgaard, who has actually put up more defensive actions than anybody in the Premier League, as well as really good progressive passing numbers. Just looks like a really good all-round midfielder. He's about to turn 28. I mean, there are a few of these guys who, if they go down, will probably stay in the Prem. But
I quite liked Ethan Pinnock as well. I don't know. I've not kept an eye on him for the last three or four games, but he looks like a Premier League quality defender as well, can feature in the centre or on the left of that back three. And last time I looked, he was putting up like 4.5 tackles and interceptions, sort of working overtime to keep them. In okay shape back there. But I'm worried. I'm worried for him, which is worrying because they're a very likeable club.
Yeah, and now we're getting into the danger zone seriously because next up we've got Leeds. Oof.
Yeah.
Oof. No, I mean, Leeds are in free fall right now. Obviously, Marcelo Bielsa is out the door. Jesse Marsh is in their last six. They've got 5 losses and a draw in their last 8 games. They've conceded 19 expected goals and 24 actual goals. Were they the first team to concede 20 goals in a month? Over the course of February, really, really bleak stuff. They've allowed 60 goals in 26 games. That's 2.3 a game. Over the course of a whole season, that would shake out to 88. So, I mean, I don't know what you do about this. The expected goal difference is rancid. The actual goal difference is even worse. I mean, it's just, I don't know, man. Like their expected goal difference is minus 18. Their actual goal difference is minus 31. So they have got a bit unlucky here, but 538, their model has them favourites to be relegated in 18th with a 35% chance, more than 1 in 3 chance, given the teams around them. This is bleak, Chris. What do you think is happening here?
I'm going to be interested to hear your thoughts on Marsh coming in, because I thought it kind of made sense in the long term. Like, elements of his game are quite simpatico with Bielsa's, right? Like, but historically, he's not been the best defensive coach. His kind of main skills have been getting teams to run hard, create high quality chances, have big turnover numbers in the final third, which is kind of what Bielsa's also great at, right? So it's not like they've gone for an ultimate pragmatist to shore them up towards the end of the season with things getting very, very iffy. Patrick Bamford's still out, or the Phillips is set to return, and they obviously are very dependent on him in that position as the anchor in front of a back four, right? They've missed him tremendously.
Yeah.
I think they're conceding 1.6 goals per 90. They conceded 1.6 goals per 90 with him, 2.5 without. Obviously, Cooper's been out as well as captain and centre-half, so very influential. So they kind of, there were points in the season where they lost the spine of their side, which, if you're a bottom half of the league side, is hard to recover from. I mean, just ask Leicester as well, who weren't in that category, but still suffered when as a result of that happening. What did you make of Marsh coming in then? Did it make sense? Did it feel you with confidence? Is it going to achieve the desired result?
I don't know, man, like, just because of the situation they're in. But I don't have an issue with it overall. I think he's a good coach. It was obviously something they've been talking about for a while. There were heavy rumours they were going to do this summer. Obviously, Bielsa, it looked like he was maybe going to go last summer, and he signed that deal to stay for the season pretty late on. So losing him in the end was not the huge divorce that it's been kind of made out to be by some people. My one concern with Marsh is that he's not got a great defensive track record. Yeah, like, I mean, before he left Leipzig this season, They had the third best attack in Germany, but the defence was 13th, obviously of 18 teams in the Bundesliga. And since Tedesco has come in, they've still got the third best attack, but now the defence is second best. So their expected goal difference has climbed from 10th best in the league to second best. So that suggests that there's a lot more to come out of that side that Marsh wasn't getting. He's clearly a clever guy. He's an extremely clever guy. But he's going to be trying to play a completely different sort of press in the middle of a season. Like, Bielsa, obviously known for playing that intense man-marking system. Bielsa really sells out to create good chances in attack. Now, Marsh creates big chances as well, but like the way he does it is by having the defence play much more aggressively rather than the attack playing much more aggressively.
Yeah, sort of positionally, right.
Yeah, so it's going to be like a very different prospect. He's going to be asking the defenders to really get stuck in and probably play in what will feel to the supporters right now like a kamikaze kind of way. Like it really does feel like this could be great. Phillips could come back. Cooper's back. You know, the defense picks up. The team looks more solid. And there's a big pickup, whether to do with Marsh or not. But Marsh gets the credit and they head into next season in a really good position. That could happen. Equally, they could just struggle, not know where they're meant to be for the first couple of weeks, get hammered another couple of times. Everything gets worse. Everyone's confidence is gone. And relegation beckons. Like, so I really don't know, because like normally we talk about this with pressing coaches, it's extremely hard for them to come in and basically translate their messages to a new squad in the course of a couple of weeks. And we're always tempted to say this guy's a pressing coach, that guy's a pressing coach, therefore there's a similarity. But Marsh and Bielsa play totally different kinds of presses. I do think that a Leipzig-style coach, or an RB-style coach, let's say, is probably a better fit for Leeds right now. They're happy to play in an energetic style, but a little bit more pragmatic. Like Hasenhüttl at Southampton is probably not the world's worst thing. You know, we talk about their injury worries, but at the same time, injuries always follow Bielsa because of his methods. And so I think that having a more high risk, high reward passing game rather than a high risk, high reward positional game might be the more sensible move for them. And I think just trying to man mark in the Prem, like, it's very enjoyable. I like that Bielsa does it, but I also think that it's probably not the best move over a long season at the end of what has been two or three long seasons, right?
Yeah, I think maybe he should just get a club in Serie A. I think those two are, I think he'd fare very, very well there, and just see out his final few years of management, you know, in a more forgiving division physically. But yeah, I've not got much more to add on Leeds, to be perfectly frank. Who else have we got left? Is it just Everton?
Just Everton. So come on, Chris, hit me with your Everton opinions. I literally don't know what to make of them. Like, I look at Everton sometimes and I'm like, you should be too talented to go down. And then I really look at them and I think, oh boy. Like, there are like two or three guys here that I actually really like.
It'd be one of the most talented squads to go down, for sure. Like, this team should be nowhere near mid-table. And I know they've not really worked out, like, they've not had a consistent starting 11, or they've not had a consistent methodology. There's been, you know, tumult left, right and centre. But there's still some very good players there who should not be fighting for their status as Premier League footballers. I mean, since Lampard has come in, what we can say on the subject of pressing now, we've just spoke about Marsh and Bielsa, is that they are allowing fewer passes per defensive action than their season average. Like, that's already come down. We saw Lampard do that at Chelsea as well. Just get his guys like working a little bit harder and a little bit more efficiently, particularly in the midfield. We expect more goals to come from Dominic Calvert-Lewin now. His fitness has returned. Like, he's looked a little bit rusty since he came back, and Richarlison is definitely more to squeeze out of him in that regard, particularly if they can create a bit more of a stable and like just a better, like a more coherent midfield behind him, because he's another person that's often dropped deep to make up for those deficiencies, right? It's really frustrating. He's wanted to play down the middle, but again, has had to drop deep on times. He's been sort of pushed out wide, and that's maybe been to the detriment of his game. But yeah, 3 points in 7 games since Christmas. They're another side that since the turn of the year have just been horrendous, and their trajectory is really, really, really alarming. In comparison to someone a little bit more plucky like Burnley. So, yeah, it's just, I don't know. I don't know. They're such a wild card in this situation.
I mean, and they've got a horrendous run-in. Like, I'm looking at Everton's run-in. They've got Spurs, United, Liverpool, Chelsea and Arsenal still to play. In fact, let me just pull up their actual run-in, their last few games. They've got United at home, Palace at home, Liverpool away, Chelsea at home, Leicester away, Brentford home, Arsenal away.
Grim.
That is really, really bad. And I mean, before that, they've got Tottenham, Wolves. It's just not good. And I just think, I don't know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin has obviously barely played, and now he's just been ruled out for another week. Davis is out for the season. Ben Godfrey's sidelined at the moment. Mina's out until April. What are we doing here? Like, how do you make a side out of this? I just don't know. Like, they've taken so few points over the last few weeks. I kind of despair for them. But obviously they've got Van de Beek in, they've got Ali in, and these are just bodies. And one of the biggest problems Everton have always had is just not having any bodies. You know, they've always had this really weird lopsided squad, but...
Yeah, I mean, John Joe Kenny is now like a regular feature, which is like the squad management, particularly in those full-back positions, has been bizarre, given that they've been so dependent historically on like Coleman and Digne. Now Kenny's playing there. I look at that starting 11, or at least in the last match against Manchester City, right? And I was just like, what is happening here? You've spent like 600 million in the last 5 or 6 years, and your back four comprises of Jonjo Kenny and Mason Holgate. And yeah, the last full 90 I watched of Everton, I think Anthony Gordon was their best player, which is pretty emblematic of the situation they find themselves in. We'll see, man. We'll see.
I'm fearful for them. So with that in mind, should we make our predictions for who is going to join Watford and Norwich in the Championship next season? Because honestly, it's pretty easy to look silly here. Like, basically any of these sides could go on a hot streak and pull away, and any one of them could just plummet to the bottom. So, come on, Chris, put your reputation on the line.
Well, I want it to be Burnley, but I don't think it will be. I have an ominous feeling for Brentford. I really do. I'll probably stick with Brentford, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really going back and forth on this. But I'm looking at Brentford, and they've played one more game than Leeds. They've got 1 point more, but their goal difference is a lot better. So in real terms, they're like 2 points better off than Leeds, right? Mm-hmm.
They've played a fair few games more than the likes of Everton, haven't they, and Burnley?
Yeah, so my brain here is saying Leeds. Because I just think that goal difference, it's the second worst in the division, and that does count here. You know, it means that Everton are only, they're kind of under a point behind, and Burnley are kind of under 2 points behind because of that goal difference. But it puts them further away from the sides ahead of them. Ooh, I don't know. Though there's a part of me, I'm between Leeds and Everton, honestly. I'm ruling Burnley out. I think Burnley will actually be fine. But there's a part of me that's seriously concerned about Everton, because also I think Lampard might just be absolutely the wrong man at the wrong time.
You can't say that Everton don't deserve it at this point for just consistently poor squad planning, for poor leadership, for, you know, non-existent executive board. Like, They're out of all of those clubs, like, at least Brentford are well run. At least Leeds, you know, had faith in Bielsa, convinced him to stay at the start of the season. Like, have had have had a bit of continuity, have really maximised the talent at their disposal. Like, same can be said about Burnley, but in a very different way, I guess. Newcastle made a brave appointment, could have had egg on their face, have now got Dan Ashworth as the director of football. Like, they're doing the right things. Like, off the pitch, some of these sides are in a much better position than Everton, aren't they? Which we definitely can't discount, like, if we're going to look at this holistically.
Yeah, I feel like Everton... Yeah, Everton are the one who, if they got relegated, you'd be really worried about what would happen to them, because also, to bring it back to what we were talking about at the top, Alisher Usmanov, who's like a major investment in the club, is not going to be able to fund the club for very obvious reasons right now. Yeah, I don't know. Whereas Brentford will just carry on doing what they do. They'll probably be fine. Leeds probably carry on doing what they do. So I don't know. You're saying Brentford. I'm saying Leeds.
Oh, God. But who are you hoping for, though? Because I'm hoping for Burnley.
Oh, God. Yeah, probably. I don't know. I mean, Newcastle would still be very, very, very funny.
Yeah, it'd be class.
Newcastle would be absolutely amazing. I want them out of the league. I want Everton's owners out of the league. I want Chelsea's owners out of the league. Like, I mean, like, I just want everyone, all the scumbags out of the league. So Newcastle would probably be funniest. But I would love not to have to go to Burnley, have them like clothesline three of our players and not get a yellow. That is it's unbelievable to me that they've gone, what, 3.5 years without a red card in the Premier League? Like, it's absolutely staggering.
Yeah, bizarre. And I welcome, you know, James Tarkowski and his sharp elbows at Leicester City next season.
Yeah, be an interesting one to see. Well, thank you very much for joining me today, Chris. Is there anything that you'd like to point the viewers / listeners to before we say goodbye?
Sure. Go and check out our... Bloody hell, Pat. I don't even know what we're putting out. My brain is still in Hamburg, basically. Go and check out the latest top 10 over on Football Daily. Came out Tuesday.
What a highly specific plug from you there, Chris. Yeah, definitely go and check out the latest video that is on Football Daily. and thank you very much for watching or listening. Make sure that you're subscribed to our podcast channel at Football Daily Podcast on YouTube, or that you subscribe to us using your favourite podcast app. And we will see you next time. Goodbye.